Hello, everyone, and welcome to Culture of Health, a show that zeroes in on healthcare matters that disproportionately impact our communities and highlights ways to break down systemic barriers to quality care. On this podcast, we'll talk with healthcare professionals and we'll hear stories that inspire and inform listeners to bravely navigate healthcare with dignity and humanity to achieve equity. I'm your host, Dr. Wando Anyoku. I'm the Chief Health Equity and Clinical Innovation Officer at Providence. And here with me today are Dr. Tanya Sorensen, Executive Medical Director for Women and Children here at Providence, and Saliha Akongwe, Clinical Program Manager for Just Birth Network. These two ladies are some rock stars, and I am so excited for them to share the work that they've been doing in this space. I'll have our guests share some of their insights with us about why Black and Indigenous women face alarming disparities in maternal mortality rates compared to white women, regardless of their income or education level. This week is Black Maternal Health Week, so the work that has been done by these two ladies and their teams really centers Black birth inequities, and so I'm excited to share what this looks like. They will share how these racial disparity extends to other life-threatening conditions during pregnancy, such as preeclampsia, postpartum hemorrhage, and increased rates of preterm birth and low birth weight. Welcome, Dr. Sorensen and Sally. And can you each please tell us a little bit about yourself and what drew us to the work? Can I start with Dr. Sorensen?
Thank you so much for having me. I have the privilege of working with Sally, Providence Swedish. I'm a maternal fetal medicine physician and executive medical director for women and children's for Providence Swedish. And as a maternal fetal medicine doc, I have observed firsthand the excess in complications in childbirth for Black women. And that has become something that is extremely important to me. And I've been fortunate enough to have really great partners such as you and Saliha to work with to try to start making that happen.
Awesome. Thank you. Sally?
Yes, thank you so much. So just a little bit about myself and also what drew me to this work. My name is Saliha Akongwe. I am a fourth generation birth worker. So I began attending births from a very young age as a teenager, actually with my mother. And this is just the way in which I was taught to relate to the birthing space. So my first birth, like I said, it was a family member, and I remember my mom just saying, okay, it's time to get up. So-and-so is in labor. You need to go ahead and get ready so that we can go ahead to this birth. And I attended a over 24-hour labor, and I observed firsthand obstetric violence, the inequities that we talk about. And at that time, we didn't have a name, or at least I didn't relate to a name of what it is that I was doing as doula. This is just what I understood supposed to do within this field. So that's what drew me into this work. It's just the way in which I was raised. I currently am a birth doula or birth worker, I like to say. I try to steer away from the doula word. I'm a postpartum birth worker. I also am full spectrum, so I do work with parents who are in need of support, trying to conceive, as well as when they're going through losses, bereavement support, and I am also a traditional midwife.
That's amazing. Such a rich heritage that you bring to our group, and we're really, really grateful and appreciated for it. Let's talk a little bit about this Black maternal health crisis. I mean, roughly 4 million babies are born each year. And yet childbirth remains one of the most precarious medical experiences, especially for Black and Indigenous women. Why is that?
I'm happy to start, Sally. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that the problem is rooted in hundreds of years of racism. And I think there's implicit bias going on in the healthcare setting in every place. And childbirth, as you say, is the more dramatic examples because although almost all of the time things go great, when they go wrong, they can go wrong quickly and in a scary way. So when we're looking at things like hemorrhage at the time of delivery or hypertensive crisis or sepsis, those are the big things that we are concerned about for severe morbidity and mortality in our moms. Those things are all things that our Black patients are more prone to again, because of a long history of racism, Black women tend to come into pregnancy anemic and hypertensive more often than white women do. And both of those factors play into how the pregnancy turns out. So we have to go the extra mile to make sure that those Black patients are receiving the extra care that they need based on what their risk factors are. And I want to make clear, this is not, you don't have high blood pressure just because you're Black. It's not hereditary. It is something that is inflicted by our system. So, and I don't know, Sally, would you like to add to that?
Absolutely. Definitely. I would say racism plays a very large part, whether you look at it as racism or if you look at it within the caste system. We are seeing where it's embedded in every piece of the ways in which we're living in our society. And so we oftentimes, I think, are looking at the way in which we care for pregnant people very singular. We're looking at them, how it is that we can take care of them, what is it that we need to prescribe, making sure that we're having our appointments and everything like that. But with the demand that is there for how many pregnant people are coming within our clinics, I feel like we're not seeing our parents enough. I also believe that the ways in which that type of care is provided, it's just not something that patients necessarily relate to. Oftentimes we see where families are walking into the clinics and it's like, okay, this is something that I have to check off my list. So they check it off, and everything that goes on during that time, it's not necessarily something that they can relate to in a way that they can actually take it home and incorporate it. And oftentimes they don't have access, or, you know, they might not even be able to get to appointments because it's difficult to travel. Like, there are just so many other pieces that are there. And so then we say, okay, yes, Black women are going through these things and they're experiencing these things, whether it's high blood pressure or they're more likely to have stillbirths or, you know, you name it. And we say, okay, Black women are at risk or and are at high risk, but ultimately the systems aren't changing to work for them. They are working in the ways in which they were built to work, which is not for them.
That is so powerful. So we know that there are issues. We know that there are these known risks and complications, especially for this population, and yet we keep not optimally serving these groups. What are we doing differently? Can you share a little bit about some of the ways that you started to put strategies in place to mitigate some of these challenges, to make it easier to provide the high quality safe care to the Black patients? You want to start, Dr. Sorensen?
Yeah. So, Sally, you said that really, really well. And I think that some of the things we need to do is understand some cultural differences, and we're really working to do that. We need to build trust with our Black and Indigenous patients because they have no reason to trust the healthcare system. So we need to do a lot more communicating, a lot more working together with the patient as this at the center of the equation, instead of sort of being paternalistic about how we're providing this care. We need to meet patients where they are. And so I will let Sally talk about her program, the Just Birth Program, in addition to team birth, which is a concept that was introduced a few years ago, and we're all working to implement that optimally. Having labor support, having culturally congruent care, having people who look like you helping to care for you. I think all of those things are important, and they're all things that we're striving for. And I won't say that we're anywhere close to there, but we're on a path. And I think, as a wise person said, I think earlier this morning, 400 years of racism is not going to be erased in a couple of years of the work we're doing, but we sure can try.
Yeah. And in my mind, what I think about is access. Oftentimes, patients are implants, everyone where we are right now, they're basically implants. We come from somewhere else. And you don't know what it is that you have access to. And so making sure that the families are aware of the resources that are out in the community, as well as within our own hospitals. So whether or not a patient needs to know that they can get a free ORCA card, or they can get a car seat, or they can get formula, or they can get donated breast milk in some way, shape, or form, making sure that patients have access to that. Another big piece to the puzzle, I think, is patient advocates. So having the cultural navigators within the Just Birth Network, just to kind of give a little background about that, Just Birth tries to provide services to all patients the best that we can for doula support, birth, as well as postpartum support, bereavement support as well, and also cultural navigators. So those cultural navigators, just being in that space and coming and speaking to someone as a person, letting them know, hey, I'm here. If you need me, I'm here. Or sometimes it's a matter of just seeing a friendly face. One of the things that I am most proud about within that program is when I received the feedback from families where they're saying, I didn't think that I needed this until I received it. And when I received it, I felt like I had someone who was me or was my mother or was my auntie in that space. And I just felt a sense of relief. And sometimes I think we see all the good that we're doing. We see all the things that we are doing right. We see that, you know, we're getting more nurses that look like the patients, and we are, you know, the hospital is clean, and think of all these things, the procedures that we're doing, they're getting better and everything like that. But it's also disconnecting more from the patient experience. And no matter what it is that we do in that space, there's always just this disconnect. And no matter how much we improve on one end, if we don't focus on that end and that side of it, I think our families are always going to feel disconnected from the work that we're doing. No matter how much we push culture work, no matter how much we push programs and new services, families have to feel connected to it. And the way to do that is to make sure that people who look like them are there and they can feel unapologetically proud about who they are and how they come into the space. And also knowing that they are owning the space, educating families and letting them know that they are hiring us. We aren't doing them a favor. They are ultimately hiring us to do this job for them. And we are a part of this very special time, and it's their baby's first birthday, and also their introduction into a new motherhood or parenthood, depending on if it's the first baby or not. So I think that plays a very big piece into making people feel wholesome within that space.
Oh my goodness. So beautifully said, Sally. I just want to spotlight for our audience what Sally just talked about, the Just Birth Network, which is really a phenomenal support program that you've just described, in which we have doulas and cultural navigators, and basically people coming alongside the birthing person to help them navigate their pregnancy, right? To be that voice when they're not feeling, you know, like they're strong enough to advocate for themselves and connect them to resources in the community. You mentioned that you don't like the doula word, but I think the magic, the super secret sauce here is the doulas and the cultural navigators. Can you explain for our audience what a doula does versus a midwife versus a cultural navigator? People may not be familiar with the difference.
Absolutely. And just for the history of doula, the reason why it's sometimes controversial for us, especially as birth workers who have trained officially as doulas, is because it translates to slave woman. And, you know, that can sometimes be very triggering, and it's a touchy subject. Also, the work in which we're doing is a lot more than that. We are a very large component and a pillar in this work. And so doulas specifically, they're a big part of the support system. They help with education. They help with the family component of being able to bridge understanding. Sometimes we're doing a lot of healing work within that space. We support the parents during the pregnancy, the childbirth, so their delivery, as well as postpartum. We are providing tools for them to understand what it is that is needed while they're in labor, as well as preparing for that, making sure that their families can feel involved, and most importantly, amplifying their voice and most of the time standing in that space and holding space for them so that they can be who they are in those moments. And like I said, providing resources, access, and all those other pieces. So we are a lot of things in one person. We each specialize in different areas. So for instance, prenatally, I might be coming to your home a lot. I might be meeting with your families and getting to know them. I'm going to teach you labor positions and prepare you for what labor is likely to look like, but also preparing you for the fact that your birth plan is just your birth wish. And how it's going to work out is how you and your baby need for it to work out. And then also making sure that you have access to going through that labor and me being able to give you tools that you may need to really have the birth that you are thinking about and wanting. And doulas play a very large part in that, as well as postpartum, making sure that you're learning how to nurse well and everybody in the family can connect well. And maybe you're feeling strange about something and you need someone to speak to. We've built that relationship. And so you can also reach out to the doula and, like, you know, let them know they're very good. Doulas are very good at being able to see when postpartum disorders are starting to rise up, and we can really call those out and we can help you to get that support and help and really just make sure that the space is feeling good. Midwives are someone who are, they're responsible for the overall care of the mother as well as the baby and delivering or catching that baby. So depending on if you're a nurse midwife, professional midwife, licensed midwife, or traditional midwife, how that looks within this country is going to be different, but ultimately you're responsible for that care. And then the cultural navigator is someone who is in that space. They are patient advocates. And we made sure that we had patient advocates who are ultimately the people who are in that space who need it. So we hired people within the community who are down the earth and who can relate well with patients and families. And they come in and they help to bridge that gap that we often see when patients are in the hospitals and they're feeling uncomfortable and they don't even know why. And so cultural navigators can come into that space and really help to make sure that the patient's voice is amplified in the moment. And they feel, once again, wholesome from all of these different pieces being there.
My word. I mean, this is not something that's common in health systems, right? To have this understanding of the unique needs of our population and really build a team to support people in the way that they need. And Dr. Sorensen, I wonder what it took. How do you get about to be a system that actually creates space for a program such as this? What sort of things do we have to think about as leaders in a healthcare system to allow for this really unique connection to the patient, as Sully says, to create a system in which people feel seen and heard?
That's a great question. And just going back to starting the doula program, when we began, there was sort of a dread on labor and delivery when a doula walked in with a patient, because there was sort of this mutual suspicion of each other. And we had to overcome that in sort of showing the value of the doula. And there's very good evidence, which, you know, docs and nurses and midwives like evidence, right? There's good evidence that doulas improve care and improve patient experience. So that took a while, and it took the doulas being very patient with us and us being very adamant that the doula is part of the care team. For example, during COVID, we did not keep doulas out of the birth room or the C-section room because they were just as much of the care team as I was. And a lot of places weren't letting doulas in because they were thought of as sort of peripheral. We don't believe that. We believe they're part of the team. Fast forward several years, and our nurses love it when patients have a doula, because that's another person in the room helping to care for the patient and helping them form that relationship. It is a culture change, and it's rocky. It's not easy. Sally will speak to that. We've had so many sort of, I want to say confrontations or, you know, situations where things were super uncomfortable, and we had to work through those. And so but you have to be committed, and you have to be very open-minded about your own biases and what your training has led you to that may not be ideal in the birth situation. You know, you can do everything right medically. You can follow your protocols and you can do everything technically well, and you can have a mom and baby go home healthy, and she had a terrible experience, and that damages that trust. So you're, in the long run, you haven't really won, right? So those are the kinds of things that we need to instill in ourselves and each other. And then I have to say, a huge part of this has been the patience of our Black colleagues in this space. They see us kind of making mistakes, or, you know, they're really trying to educate us, which they don't have any obligation to do. But I think we see this mutually helpful to serve our patients. But sometimes I know it gets super frustrating and people feel like, why am I even bothering? And they stick with it. And so I thank Sally. I try to thank her at least once a month for sticking with it and putting up with the frustrations.
I love it. I just want to highlight the words that keep coming up in this conversation: trust, experience, outcome, right? Because sometimes we think, well, you know, mom and baby were alive, so what could have gone wrong, right? And I like the mindset that a living, alive and well mother and baby is the floor. That's the minimum that people should expect, right? And so really thinking about a more holistic approach to making their experience and that birthing, you know, Sally described it as a baby's first birth, that the baby just arrived and the parent just, you know, became a parent again, and honoring that sacred encounter. I really love that. And calling out the importance of having support at the highest level from an organization, understanding the value of this is so incredibly important. So how do we go, you know, to people listening out there, if you have someone who's about to have a baby, how do they go about suddenly looking for support like this? How do they ask for this kind of help or find, what should they do?
Yeah, so I always recommend a few things. First thing, I think that all parents need to be educated on the experience of childbirth. So receiving culturally competent childbirth education, if you do a Google search and you look for childbirth education and you look at the childbirth educator themselves, making sure that they are someone who is competent, and at least that they're someone who looks like you, you can try them out. Also, getting a doula early on. You can find a doula by Doula Match. You can find a doula by Sister Midwife Productions. You can find a doula by asking on Facebook. Social media is the age of knowing at this point. So whether it's TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, you can find a doula in some way, shape, or form. Another big piece is also making sure that your family is being educated on what it is that you want and what it is that you desire for your birth, because it's not just about the birthing person. I think when we're talking about Black maternal health, we always center on the birth workers as well as the person who's pregnant. And as Black people in America, it's not just that for us. It has everything to do with how our mothers feel, how our aunties feel, how our husbands or our spouses feel, how our other children feel, how our friends feel. How they feel and how they treat us also impacts how it is that we go through the pregnancy and how we plan to deliver. Another big thing that I tell parents to do is I say, interview your provider. If they start speaking about, let's say you're somebody who's like, okay, how do you feel about induction, or how do you feel about me having a VBAC or not having another C-section? And they start speaking to you in a way where they make you feel like it's not your choice, or they start telling you what it is that they are going to do, or what they recommend is something that you don't necessarily like or feel comfortable with, and they don't trust you in trusting your body when you say that you want something, find a different provider. Once again, you're hiring them. If you're on Medicaid, a lot of places take Medicaid. If you want to pay out of pocket, you can go any other place. If you have commercial insurance, you can go any other place. If you aren't comfortable with delivering in a hospital, look at your options. Birth centers, Black midwives are all over the place at this point in time. And I'm a huge advocate for the fact that whether you're delivering at home, in a birth center, or at the hospital, you have the power to say, this is who I want to be there at my birth. And if you're going to be at a clinic, make sure that you are aware of all the people who are at the clinic who are going to be facilitating your care. Preparing postpartum is another big piece. You need a postpartum plan. not a baby shower, but a postpartum plan. You need people who are going to come and who are going to make sure that they're going to, that you're fine, and they're going to cook for you, and they're going to take care of you, and people who are actually going to come and show up. And if they come and they decide to take the baby, that's cool, but make sure somebody rubs your back too, and make sure someone feeds you too, and make sure that someone's making sure that you're walking around and doing things to make sure that your own body is healing. And make sure that your partner also has some support, whether that's talking to someone afterward. And then a big piece also postpartum, because as we know, Black women, they oftentimes are at risk postpartum because all the things that were wrong with you before you even got pregnant, they would kind of stay hidden in the background during your pregnancy. And then postpartum, they come out full-fledged, ready to fight. And you and your body, you don't know what's going on half of the time. So have somebody who you can call where it's like, okay, this is something feels wrong. Something don't feel right. Okay, I'm going to the bathroom and this is how it feels. Or, oh, I'm walking around and this is how it feels. Have someone who you feel comfortable complaining to so that they're like, that don't sound right, sis. Go ahead and go to the hospital. Or I'm going to take you. Or if you're worried about your kids, I'm going to come get your kids so that you can go. Make sure you have someone who's going to also hold you accountable for making sure that you get checked out, because 6 weeks and waiting to find a doctor, 6 weeks, or going to your doctor 6 weeks afterward is not enough.
Oh, okay. I'll just catch my breath right there for a minute. But that's, you know, there's words there. I have nothing to add. Thank you, Sully. Let me just go to you, Dr. Sorensen. As a clinician, how do we show up for our patients so that we create this space for them? What would you say to other physicians and clinical leaders?
Yeah, thank you. And I also want to just say that was so powerful. I think you can tell Sully and I've been working together for a while, because one of my passions is postpartum and getting the right care and understanding that if you have a pregnancy complication, such as growth restriction, preterm delivery, high blood pressure, any of those things, you within a few years have an increased risk of cardiovascular disease. And we don't remember that. We don't pay attention to that. And I think that's something that, again, is a more holistic way to look at things. I also would just add one more thing, which is as you're looking at where you're going to deliver, if you're delivering in a hospital, be sure that that hospital is following high-risk bundles. So in other words, they have a standard protocol for treating a hypertensive crisis, for treating a hemorrhage. So there's not a lot of room for variation, and everybody is getting the best possible care. As far as colleagues, let's just start with listen. We have to listen. We need to stop talking and we need to listen for a minute, right? That can be hard with schedules and all that, but that doesn't excuse it. You have to listen. And then you also have to reflect a little bit. I've been doing a lot of reflecting myself recently, and I've told people about a situation I was in with a patient, and she's a Black woman who's just delightful. And we were having a really nice visit, and I brought up labor induction, assuming that somebody had talked to her about that. I hadn't seen her for most of the pregnancy, but I was filling in. And she's like, I don't want a labor induction. So I sort of stepped back and I was like, oh, okay, we don't need to do that. And has anyone talked to you about it? And she's like, not really. So we talked through the whole thing, and she didn't commit one way or another. You know, I kind of gave her what the information was, the reason that we might want to induce her and the risks of not of staying pregnant versus the risks of being induced. And we had just a great conversation, but I had made an assumption, and we have to just catch ourselves in those, making those assumptions. Like, it is not my decision to make, it's her decision to make. And my job is to provide information and in a kind, compassionate way. And then it's back to, I need to listen to her. So I think if we can get to that point, we will have gone a very long way.
I love it. I'm going to add listen to the list of magic words coming out of this conversation today, because it's so critical. Listen, hear me, see me, right? And know what's important to me. I love it. So that it's a partnership, right, in the journey of pregnancy and delivery. And it's not us imposing what we think is best, because, you know, most of us, we all come into it wanting to do the best for our patients. But to Sally's point, understanding that it's a partnership in this journey that we get there. What role can loved ones play? You know, we've talked about the birthing person and their, but what about their loved ones? What about their network? What can they do to support someone who's getting ready, a Black woman getting ready to have a baby?
I think very similar to what has been said before, listen. There are a lot of things and a lot of dynamics that are at play in our families just on an individual basis. And it's not black and white. Not everybody has the same situations. But knowing that pregnancy is, for one, it's intimate for the person who's carrying the child. That's like one very deep layer. And then you have the person who conceived the child with her or them. And then it goes out. There's another layer. There's the people who she's choosing to have very deeply connected to that process. And then there's another layer out where, you know, you have people who are around, who are seeing, who are observing this person while they're pregnant. And it keeps going out and out and out. And I think what we're seeing now is that everybody feels very entitled to that space. And the type of pressure that puts on pregnant people, it's very hard. Especially for Black women, it's very hard to feel like we're disappointing anyone at any point in time, because historically we have held everyone at all times. And so I would say allow for the pregnant mother to sit in the passenger seat for a little while. Allow for her to just do whatever it is that she feels like she needs to do. And then family members support in any way. If you're someone who, let's say you're finding out the person's pregnant 20 weeks after and you find out, and instead of texting like, hey, I'm just finding out you're pregnant, so you didn't think that I should know, why don't you go ahead and offer, you know, postpartum, I want to be able to cook some meals for you. If you need anything, let me cook some meals for you. For the partner to be educated, whether it's a husband, a wife, however it is that you choose, make sure that you're educated so that when you're in the position of supporting the person during labor, if you are family and you're in the position of supporting the person during the labor, when be that ultimately that protection so that they can go through that laboring process. And when they speak, you can amplify that their words, their voice as well. So for instance, if a person is like, look, I'm in labor. I don't want you to ask me about an epidural. And you keep seeing somebody come in asking about an epidural. You be that voice. If she has asked you to not ask about an epidural, we need that documented so no one else comes in and asks about that. Document, and I would like to see it documented. You know, being that power on that side for the birthing person, making sure that, you know, the children are taken care of. I think any way in which you can uplift that person while they're pregnant is going to be golden.
Oh my goodness. I just want you to know that this conversation could go on for the whole day because you're absolutely filling my cup, both of you ladies. But I want to ask before, I think we may need to wrap up soon, but before we go, is there anything that we haven't discussed that you want to make sure that our listeners know, Dr. Sorensen?
For one, I would add on to what Sally was just talking about. And from the clinician standpoint, you see who's coming to the visits with your pregnant patient, and you see who's in the birth and who's in the room postpartum. And if you're concerned about postpartum depression, for example, or you're concerned with postpartum depression, is, I think, a really good example, because if you develop postpartum depression, you often don't recognize what's going on. You feel terrible. You feel apathetic. You can't summon the energy to recognize what's going on and ask for help. So educating the family, the people around the person, that to look for some things, and, you know, obviously with the permission of your patient, but to look for signs and symptoms that might be concerning, that the person herself, as she's caring for her baby and she's exhausted and she's up all night, maybe won't recognize. So I would put that out there for the education of the docs and the midwives. And then I have to say too, this work is hard and it's not happening everywhere evenly. So when you're somewhere where you maybe don't have the same opportunities to have a Black doula or to have a navigator, or maybe you're not connected with some of the community organizations. And by the way, that is something else I'd want to call out, that we have some great community partners who can help us in this space. But when you're there and you don't see these things, ask for them. Ask for them. You know, the patient demand is, as Sally says, you're hiring us. The patient demand is an important way that we can spread this work to other systems and other hospitals.
Thank you. Anything you want our listeners to know, Sally?
I think I said most of what I needed to say, for sure. I absolutely agree with Tanya as well. Make sure that you ask if you're a provider, I think a big message that I'm leaning on is watch how you speak to patients about Black maternal health and the outcomes and the statistics. I think that is actually where I would leave it, because oftentimes we hear the message that Black women are dying, Black women are dying. And at this point, as a Black woman, I can see that that's all that's being said in media. And it leaves us fearful. I remember being a teen mother and not knowing anything about anything. And that allowed me to birth in a way that didn't have me afraid, because I had my support team. I had the people behind me. And now, as an adult, I'm more afraid to give birth now than I was when I was a teenager. And a lot of that is because the message that we are seeing constantly is that I am Black, so I'm going to die because I'm going to have a baby. And so I think just changing the way that we have this conversation, how we speak about it to patients, especially if you're someone who is educated in it and you want the patient and the families to know that you're educated, just be aware of how you speak about it.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Tanya Sorensen and Sally Akonbe, for joining us today on Culture of Health to talk about this important topic and the work that you're doing to close the discrepancies in maternal birth care between for our Black mothers, Black birthing people. We look forward to continuing this important conversation on health and wellness with more experts from Providence in future episodes. Please subscribe to Culture of Health on your favorite podcast platform and make sure to listen to all our shows on Lit Live Radio under Future of Health or your favorite podcast platform. You can follow us on social media. We can be found on Twitter and Facebook at Providence and Instagram under Providence Health Systems. To learn more about our mission, programs, and services, please go to providence.org. And please remember, the information provided during this program is for educational purposes only. You should always consult your healthcare provider if you have any questions regarding your medical conditions or treatment. Thank you so much for listening. And remember that at Providence, we see the life in you.